You know what that means? You're tuned in to Everything Under the Sun, Soper Sun's weekly radio show, Thursdays at 4. I am your host, Yesenia Benavides Burgos, and I'm here with my boss, lowliest co-host.
James Steinler, thank you so much for hosting again, Yesenia. I always love it when you host, and you're on the board today. Thank you.
So if there's any mess-ups, that's why.
I doubt there will be any mess-ups. You're going to do a great job. And if there are, mistakes are what make us learn. Turning up my mic a bit. So if you haven't already, folks, there's a new issue of the Soper Sun on newsstands up and down the valley. Yesenia, have you had a chance to grab a Soper Sun yet?
No.
Well, you can right here at KD&K. It's one of hundreds of distribution spots for the Soper Sun. It's a beautiful cover. Actually, it's the Soper Sun's 16th birthday, technically yesterday.
Yes.
February 12th, the first issue of the Soper Sun printed on February 12th, 2009. Mm. So when we went to press yesterday, that marked 16 years of delivering the newspapers. I calculated that out. That'd be about 832 newspapers delivered in the last 16 years. So that's, we haven't missed a week. The Soper Sun has not missed a week of delivering the newspaper. And with all things like anniversaries, we want to celebrate the community that makes up the Soper Sun. There's a lot of everyone from the readers to the writers. We have more writers than any newspaper in the valley because of our freelance pool. But everyone deserves to be celebrated, and therefore we do have a celebration at the Old Thompson Barn and RVR coming up on February 20th to celebrate the Soper Sun's Sweet 16, legal to drive. We hope you'll be there. You can find tickets and more information at SoperSun.com. So please join us on the 20th at between 5 and 8 for the Sweet 16 celebration of the Soper Sun. And without further ado, this week we will be covering the page, I flipped right to it, 7 story by yours truly, Scratching the Surface at the Mid-Continent Limestone Quarry. And we are joined by Jeff Peterson of the Glenwood Springs Citizens Alliance, a watchdog group formed strictly to monitor the activity at the Mid-Continent Limestone Quarry operated by Rocky Mountain Industrials. So welcome, Jeff.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And this isn't your first time speaking on KD&K, is it?
It is not. You guys do a great job and appreciate the opportunity to come and speak with you again.
We feel so blessed, the Soper Sun, to be able to come in every week. Yesenia and I and Raleigh sometimes. Raleigh and I go back and forth. We love the partnership with KD&K and the Soper Sun. And I'm guessing that you've spoken on the air in regards to the same topic that we'll be discussing today.
We have multiple times.
Okay, great. Well, and it is, and I'll just right off the bat point out that the Glenwood Springs Citizens Alliance has a really elaborate and detailed website that follows the history at the mine and more so since it's been watching what the mine's been up to and the owners of the mine since 2018 and its formation. Do you know that website off the top of your head?
Our website is loveglenwood.org, and have to give a shout out to one of our board members, Heather McGregor, former editor of the Post Independent, for her outstanding communication skills and keeping everybody up to date.
You could tell that it's curated by a journalist, just because the stories are so wonderful and like very informative and concise.
She does a great job.
Yeah, well, you're lucky to have Heather, that's for sure. This story has so much to it, and you and I have discussed that already. And you're, of course, well aware of the complexities. And I told you my head was swimming. But let's give a little bit of a backstory about the Mid-Continent Limestone Quarry and the current operators of that quarry who were reached out to for this story a few times. I did reach out to them and never received a response to that they wished to speak with me. If you can speak to history of the mine and since Rocky Mountain Industrial has taken it over.
Sure, absolutely. So the history of the mine goes back 43 years. It was originally permitted in 1982 as a 15-acre quarry that was permitted under the 1872 mining law to extract high-quality limestone for methane suppression in the coal mines. It operated continuously for many years under Pitkin Iron's control, and ultimately in the early 2000s was purchased by a company called Calex. Calex later went on in 2016 to sell that quarry to Rocky Mountain Resources, and they have, over the course of the last 9 years, been continually operating and extracting material out of the site. And it appears that a majority of their extraction has changed from that high-quality limestone that they were originally permitted under and utilizing the 1872 mining law, from that high-quality limestone for methane suppression to more of a riprap boulders aggregate-type material.
Okay. If I could cut in there, the 1872 mining law, and could you explain what that covers and what people can mine under that law?
Sure, absolutely. So the 1872 mining law is a really broad law that was instituted more than 150 years ago at this point to incentivize miners to look for materials with intrinsic value, whether it be gold or silver. Limestone is on that list. And essentially, those materials are able to be taken off of the public lands for free, provided they're utilized for their intrinsic value and qualifying end use.
And the original intrinsic value in 1982, when the mine quarry or the quarry opened, this limestone quarry, Mid-Continent Limestone Quarry, was pure limestone, or as close as it can get, and it was intended for methane control in coal mines.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And so to qualify under 1872 mining law with limestone, you have to have a 95% purity.
Okay. Great. And okay, so if you can continue on with a little bit of the history.
Sure.
And yeah.
So, you know, after RMI purchased the mine in 2016, they, as I was saying, continued to operate and were extracting the road base and backfill and aggregate mm-hmm. materials. And then in 2018, they announced that they wanted to take this 15.7-acre quarry to a permitted area of 447 acres with a 321-acre pit extracting 5 million tons a year for the next 20 years, primarily of aggregate, taking that material down transfer trail, putting it in the rail yard, and then shipping it over to Denver via rail car.
Wow. And so, and currently about how many trucks maybe come down on a regular basis or a day?
You know, I think it varies. Okay. There have been times where it's 50 or 60. There have been times where it's a couple.
Okay.
So there are limits within their Garfield County special use permit as to how much they can mine on a daily basis. And there have been times where we believe they've gone over that limit as well.
Okay.
But to give context to 5 million tons per year, if they were to mine 365 days a year, 12 hours a day, they would need to average 38,000 pounds a minute of production.
Wow.
Taking 450 trucks down the hill a day to dump into the rail yard across from Iron Mountain Engineering with Iron Mountain Hot Springs.
Right.
With a locomotive waiting at the base of the hill.
Yeah. So they'd be on public roads at that point. And so it'd be a significant, I feel like that would just be hard to miss on a daily basis, that like constant entourage or, flow of truck traffic.
Absolutely. You know, certainly. And, it would be devastating to the community of Glenwood, the for both locals, tourists alike. We see that as a devastating impact that would have serious ramifications for our community. And in fact, earlier in the process, the city of Glenwood did an analysis of what the impact might be and came back with, I believe, an assessment that it could impact the local economy negatively by about $27 million per year.
Wow. And so that push isn't necessarily dead in the water from RMI. They still have 44 claims that would cover about that 447 acres.
That's correct. So they have pushed hard and sued Garfield County. They have really interacted negatively with the community. And as they've seen united community opposition kind of continue to push their agenda despite overwhelming opposition. And this is a nonpartisan issue. This is a community-wide issue of opposition and honestly, valley-wide. Mm-hmm. There are resolutions of opposition from communities from Eagle County to Parachute and up to Aspen. So mm-hmm. It's really been recognized throughout the valley and beyond as a negatively impactful proposal.
Okay. And the argument that they've made how it might benefit the community would be job creation.
Yeah, initially they talked about 40, 50 jobs being created. And as opposition grew, the number of jobs they proposed or stated might be created increased. But certainly our view is that the amount of jobs lost in other sectors of the economy would most likely greatly outpace anything gained.
Wow. For our listeners, you are tuned into Everything Under the Sun.
I am your host, Yesenia Benavides, and
I'm James Steinler, and it's this weekly radio show for the Sopra Sun, and I'm your co-host, and we are speaking today with Mr. Jeff Peterson of the Glenwood Springs Citizens Alliance regarding the Page 7 article, Scratching the Surface at the Mid-Continent Limestone Quarry. Thank you again, Jeff, for joining us. So let's maybe go into, because we're almost halfway through our show. It goes by so quickly. It really is amazing. Let's maybe go turn to more current circumstances up at the mine. There's been quite a bit of development in just the past 2 months.
There have. So I want to backtrack 1 second to Please talk do. About that expansion proposal.
Please
One
do.
Of the first processes in that proposal is to do what's called a determination of common variety, or a DCV. Mm. And that process analyzes the quality of the product, the limestone on various claims, and looks at marketability and market conditions, profitability for what's being proposed. And over the course of 5 years, BLM worked with mineral exam experts to analyze the hillside and ultimately came back and determined that under 1872 mining law, the only material that would be qualifying is an FAA road-based material.
And that's using that what they determined to be 95% pure.
Utilizing the intrinsic value of the product.
Okay.
And so once that was kind of finalized, over the last several months, there have been some progressive actions by the BLM. This is in conjunction with Rocky Mountain Resources non-compliance issues that have been fought and battled for years with operating outside of their permit area, having high wall construction that doesn't align with their permit, et cetera. So on January 3rd, the BLM issued a letter to RMI from the assistant secretary stating that they needed to pay back the taxpayers or the federal government for material taken off of the lands that didn't qualify as a locatable mineral that they've pulled off of the site since 2019, and that they were no longer permitted to mine and pull material off the site that wasn't a qualifying product without the required material sales contract.
Right. And okay. And so, and also to do that, correct me if I'm wrong, in order to get, is it right? In order for them to get a material sales contract, first they need to meet the requirement of the general mining law and have that FAA grade, limestone mark, and also have to produce that limestone, that pure limestone, but then also have to prove marketability.
That's our understanding, that they would need to show a market entry, marketability, and profitability. Okay. To continue mining. And then in addition to that, if they wanted to move into more of a common variety of material, they would need to go through an assessment that would include impacts to the surrounding community, economy, environment, to gain that material sales contract.
And that material sales contract, that came, was that, did that come out of another piece of legislation in the 1940s?
That's correct.
Okay. Okay. And that made it possible to where mines could mine for that aggregate composites.
Well, as they could use the byproduct of a 1872 mineral claim, so long as the mineral claim itself is a profitable operation, they could sell that byproduct.
Okay. Okay. And then as mentioned in the article that you said was some news for the Glenwood Springs Citizens Alliance, is that in that January 3rd letter, it was asked that Rocky Mountain Industrials or Rocky Mountain Resources pay back in from an escrow account?
That's correct. So in 2019-2020, the Citizens Alliance pushed the BLM to say, hey, we've got clear evidence that these guys are selling non-locatable materials. They shouldn't be allowed to do that under their permit. And to deal with that situation, BLM came back and said, hey, you know, while we're doing this determination of common variety to decide if that material is 1872 mining law product or not, we're going to set up an escrow account that ultimately every month you pay into for material that you're taking off of those public lands. And it's a nominal fee per ton. And RMI has been paying into that escrow agreement or escrow account for 5 years while the determination of common variety was being assessed. Mm-hmm. And now that that assessment is complete and it was shown that a lot of that material was common variety, they needed to turn over those escrow funds to the BLM to reimburse the taxpayers,
the people. And that's the, so 1872 mining law, you get to mine all you want for free as long as it meets a certain quality standard and ends purpose. But the 1947 law said, okay, you could use this byproduct, but you will have to pay royalties back to the people.
Correct.
Okay, great. Wow.
There's a lot to unpack, isn't
there's
there?
There's so much. And then also there's so many lawsuits going back and forth. And it's not just lawsuits necessarily against against RMI as the respondent, but it's also lawsuits that GSCA has even filed against BLM.
That's correct. So there's been several cases of litigation. RMI brought a suit against Garfield County saying they didn't have the right to enforce their special use permit. Through the course of that litigation, Garfield County hired expert outside counsel and was able to prove through the court system that indeed they do have the right to enforce environmental regulations on property within Garfield County, even though it's on federal land.
Very cool.
So during that process, Garfield County updated their 1041 regulations on mining, which was great. And we certainly appreciate the commissioner's recognition that their old regulations were out of date. Mm-hmm. And then the Citizens Alliance sued BLM for a couple issues. The first was that they were failing to regulate the mine properly and follow federal regulations. And ultimately, with that January 3rd letter, which said you have been mining common variety materials, you can no longer mine common variety materials, we entered into agreement to end that litigation. with the caveat, and the judge has ruled that the DCV was a final decision and non-reversible, and that qualifying end use mattered. So felt positive in the conclusion of that litigation. And then the second litigation that the GSCA brought against the BLM was a Freedom of Information Act litigation with respect to turning what was previously documents provided by the BLM on RMI's sales receipts into confidential business documents, then no longer providing that information and blocking out massive amounts of data that we'd requested.
Right. And so because before you had requested documentation about sales transactions through the BLM.
We had requested general information on anything related to the mine, and they had provided those monthly sales tickets.
Okay. And you did that through a FOIA request.
Correct.
And then, but later, after you tried doing the same thing, that information became unavailable.
Exactly.
Wow. Interesting. And perhaps because of this watchdog group.
You know, it's been interesting to watch over the course of the last 7 years. We've certainly had ups and downs, and realistically, it's been heartening to see the community come together, united in opposition. We have been able to establish a great coalition of partners, whether it be the city of Glenwood, Garfield County commissioners, the business community throughout Glenwood, and residents. So it's really been interesting and heartening to see everybody come together on this issue.
Okay. So we only have about 5 more minutes left. where are we now, and can RMI go from here?
So your reporting revealed for the first time that RMI has submitted a new plan of operation to the BLM. I'm sure the BLM is working to deem if that plan modification is complete. We don't know at this point whether it is a plan to rectify the slope stability issue that they had a couple years ago when the rock came down into the pit and right. destabilized the hillside, or if it's a broader expansion to that 447 acres that they've been pursuing for years.
And the state, because RMI did, or Rocky Mountain Resources, they did file, interestingly enough, I believe after the January 3rd letter, they filed a technical revision to try and have the state boundary expanded. And the state responded saying they couldn't file it as a technical revision. It'd have to go through an amendment process.
No, that's correct, 100%. So there's a little bit of an oddity, as you noted in your story, that Garfield County's permit area differs from BLM's permit area, which differs from the state's DRMS permit area.
Which is not typical, according to the state.
Correct. And so the state's area is substantially bigger than the federal BLM permit acreage of about 16 acres. The state is closer to 38. And in late January, RMI filed a technical revision to expand their acreage from 38 acres to 56 acres. And in that process, everything was marked confidential, but they did have on their website that a technical revision had been submitted. And so one of our board members, Heather, caught that wind of that, and our attorney immediately wrote a letter to DRMS saying, hey, this does not comply with your own regulations. You can't expand an acreage under a technical revision. And thankfully, DRMS responded promptly within 2 days of our letter and denied RMI's technical revision.
Yeah, and in that technical revision, they said that they were, or in the response, they said they were expecting that technical revision, the latest one, to address the rock bolting, rather, or the rock stabilization.
Correct. So the state holds a reclamation bond to reclaim the site if operations cease. And over the course of the last several years, that bond amount has been insufficient as increasing costs have gone. And then in addition, with that rock slide that occurred in January of 23, there's still a portion of the hillside above the site that is deemed unstable. And so through RMI's own geotechnical analysis, one of the remedial efforts or remediation efforts was to rock bolt that ledge of unstable rock above the pit for stabilization. And that was a major increase of, you know, ninefold from what their current bond amount was. And so the state was expecting a technical revision related to that slope stability issue and dealing with getting a proper amount of bonding to reclaim the site. And Rocky Mountains Industrial's technical revision did not appear to address those issues.
Okay. Well, we want to thank you for joining us today. We are coming towards the end of our show. It goes by so quickly.
Thank you so much for having us, and appreciate all the work you've done and your reporting.
We so appreciate your time joining us today. And for folks who want to follow this issue, again, the website for Glenwood Springs Citizens Alliance, Jeff?
Is loveglenwood.org.
Okay, and there's a plethora of information on there, and they will update you as soon as they know new information. It's really wonderfully put together. So thank you again, Jeff, for joining us. And thank you, Yesenia, for hosting.
Yes, of course.
If you haven't picked up a copy of The Soapy Sun, Yesenia, make sure you get one. Thank you all for joining us today on Everything Under the Sun. Have a great Thursday.